Hello and welcome to today's Tariff Digital podcast, where we are going to be talking about digital inclusion, specifically everything we've learned a year after launching our digital inclusion campaign, aimed at helping charities reach across the digital divide to deliver more impact to as many people as possible. As champions of digital in the sector, we know that digital technology can be transformative in helping charities achieve their goals, whether it's reaching new supporters or delivering more services. But we also must acknowledge the challenges around how inclusive and accessible digital technology is, with millions of people in the UK unable to get online even in an increasingly digital world. This is a particular issue for the charity sector, whose purpose is reaching as many people as possible, from supporters to volunteers to beneficiaries. Our report, Digital Inclusion in the UK Charity Sector, which we'll talk about a lot in this podcast and link to in the resources, revealed that 82% of charities are concerned about digital inclusion, with more than half finding it difficult to reach service users due to problems with digital technology. This is why we felt the digital inclusion campaign was timely, to help address these problems and make using digital more effective for everyone. In this podcast, I am joined by Johan Mark Jones, Head of Content at Charity Digital, and JC Sparling, Content Writer at Charity Digital, to explore what we've learned about digital inclusion as part of our campaign, looking at lessons from our report and working closely with other charities tackling the issue. So let's start with the report. The report exists because we wanted to know more about the digital inclusion challenges charities are facing and to understand what the sector needed to address them. So, JC, let's start with you. What does the report tell us about digital inclusion in the UK charity sector?
Yeah, so I think the three key kind of headline facts from the report were that although 90% of charities use digital tools to deliver charity services, 56% find it difficult to reach service users due to problems with digital technology. So it's unsurprising, as you mentioned, that 82% are concerned about digital inclusion. Digging into those facts a bit more, a key area we found was about digital strategy. More than a third of respondents said they didn't have a digital strategy. And of those who did, only half included reaching service users, while just 47% included upskilling staff and volunteers. And this is a problem because the biggest barriers that charities said they had to delivering and improving digital services were a lack of skills among service users, the inability to reach service users digitally, and a lack of skills internally. So this, we found, was a key opportunity for charities to improve their digital services. Writing a digital strategy and including how they reach service users who have low digital skills or other digital barriers, and as well as upskilling staff and volunteers. Another key area of the report was digital skills. The report tells us that everyone involved in charities, service users and volunteers are the most impacted by lacking digital skills. So for charity professionals, our survey found that when it comes to digital confidence, more than 7 in 10 charity professionals rated themselves between 8 and 10. So they were quite very confident with digital. And interestingly, trustees were the most likely to rate themselves highly in digital confidence. In contrast, service users had more problems with digital skills, as reported by charities. So 57% of charities say a lack of digital skills among service users is a barrier to delivering and improving services. And when it comes to volunteers, 37% of charities said they find it difficult to reach volunteers due to problems with digital technology. One respondent told us about their volunteers that access to the internet devices and skills are so varied, yet the charity needs them to all meet similar standards. So it can be quite hard to work with volunteers who all have different levels of digital knowledge and engagement and access at home. And then the final thing I wanted to talk about is about the role of cost for charities. Mm. So cost was the biggest barrier to delivering and improving digital services. And I think a big problem with that from when charities wrote about their experience to us, we found there was no one-size-fits-all solution. So we know that digital inclusion is complex. It includes digital skills, access to devices in the internet, and accessibility of devices, software, online content, and more. So these problems can combine. And some charities told us they struggled to address digital exclusion among service users and volunteers when there was such a mixture of problems faced by different people. And our report suggested that charities feel like there's a lack of time and money to develop sophisticated solutions to these complex problems.
That's really, that's Excellent overview. Thank you so much, Josie. Was there anything in that that was surprising to you, Johan? Or what are we doing well as a sector?
I think in terms of surprising, I think there's the skills stuff is unsurprising, I'd probably mention. But partly it's frustrating in a way, because I feel like there is lots available to charities and service users so they can improve their skills. So we saw that 57% of respondents said the absence of skills among service users was a key barrier. We saw in the Charity Digital Skills Report, which is always a great place to look, that the second biggest challenge, the widening digital skills or the skills gap, is the second biggest challenge currently facing the sector, with 47% of charities saying there is a barrier to digital progress. And internally, we see that the issues aren't as stark. So we do see it, as Josie mentioned, it's an issue within the sector internally. Our digital skills aren't perhaps where we want them to be, but they're certainly not as stark as the sort of excluded people that we're trying to serve. But I think one of the ways that charities can address that is just by actually thinking about how to provide training to their service users and utilizing some of the many things that are free and available. So, I mean, 7 in 10 charities, as mentioned, offer no digital training to service users, which is not surprising in a notoriously time-poor sector. It's just not a priority, but the training is there. So just some examples is Age UK have simple how-to guides, and they offer computer training to some older people, which is available and it's free. So there is that easy route through. Learn My Way from the Good Things Foundation. Good Things Foundation will probably mention 50 times on this podcast because they're always doing such great things. But that, again, provides free digital skills training with subjects ranging from how to set up an email account to safety and security and cyber security and stuff like that online. Future Learn, Accenture, they offer a free digital skills for work and life course, which again prepares service users to access those things. And that one's quite an interesting one because it's for life. A lot of the things that relate around digital exclusion that we see is stuff like access to healthcare, access to education, access to banking and stuff like that. The things that we all take for granted, people who are, you know, digital natives or whatever word, I don't know if that's still what we're calling it, but digital natives like ourselves, we sort of, I hope, well, I don't speak for you both, but we are online banking. We're using online shopping and everything like that, almost without much thought. And these sorts of skills classes allow you to prepare for that. And then the WEA has a range of digital skills courses, which are free for unemployed people, job seekers, and people on low wages. That's just the stuff that you can Google, essentially, stuff that you can find. And obviously, Googling in itself is something that can digitally exclude. But I guess the point I'm making is that charities should be pushing that more, ourselves, but other people, getting people to understand that help is out there, it's free, and maybe trying to find a route to help them access that. Because I guess there's a little bit of an issue in terms of like a lot of that stuff's online, and to find it, you see there's almost a small barrier there to help, and charities can work to overcome that. And the other thing I'd say is there's a lot of charities that we've worked with and a lot of charities that we know of who have sort of their purpose is to help offer digital advice, not just to charities, but they can also help charities access their service users. So a few that come off the top of my head is Digital Candle. They typically help charities, kind of like us. Their mission's similar to us. They're sort of pushing and helping charities understand and utilize tech to the best of their ability. But they can also give advice about how you can help your service users and the best ways to do that, the free or easily kind of accessible ways to do that. AbilityNet are obviously a great example of someone who are tackling digital exclusion. So they provide IT support for older people and people with disabilities across the UK. So a great organisation, again, for people to access if they want to support their service users. And the NCVO are probably a quite high-level example, but they have loads of interesting resources that can teach charities and their service users how to use digital. So, yeah, I guess my overriding point in terms of digital skills is that while the survey does highlight the issue quite clearly, and it was the thing that stuck out most to me initially, but I also thought to myself, there is so many places we know of, because we're Charity Digital and that's news, but there's so many places we know of that are offering these things, and it's kind of just maybe we need to shout that a bit louder and maybe need to play a bit of a role there.
That's interesting.
Thank you.
We actually did a really interesting video series with Okta and Dot Project on digital strategy. And we spoke to 5 different charities about how they formulated their digital strategy. And a lot of the problems that a lot of the challenges that charities really faced with that was how the resources were there, but they weren't sure how they were being used or accessed. And there's a really interesting interview with someone from Baines Carers Centre, where they did lots of user research, and they said that they were going to go down this route of thinking, well, why aren't people using this tool? The tool's really good. But actually, it was a problem with no one knew what the tool was used for. And they didn't realise that until they were doing the user research. I just think that's really interesting that they had this tool, it was there, but why wasn't anyone using it? And I think that that's a really important thing to delve into when we talk about skills and training and access. Because, I think we make a lot of assumptions sometimes that this is here, you should be using it. But maybe it's about delving into why as well. Because I found those training statistics really surprising. We're saying that skills are really important and that they're a big barrier to improving the digital services, but we're not offering training ourselves or pointing towards it. It's interesting. I think that leads us quite nicely into the second question. What are the most pressing digital challenges for charities in 2025 and beyond? Who would like to take that first? Should I go to Johan, seeing as you and second?
It's that point in the podcast where we have to talk about AI, isn't it? it's funny because I think AI is obviously relatively easy to use, but it's difficult to use effectively. So I think a lot of people across the sector, in fact, in terms of digital inclusion, typing a prompt into it's not a search engine, but typing a prompt into a model is essentially a far easier way of accessing information than what we were using previously, which is Google, Google or search engines, for example, which can be a little bit less reliable in terms of finding the information. But obviously the reliability with AI is a huge issue because the information is not a fact check a lot of the time, and we know hallucinations exist. So I think using the tech effectively is presents this huge problem because it can further the digital divide, further the skills gap, and just basically create issues that we don't really want. So there was a really, Josie might know where it was, but there was a really interesting article that I can't remember who it's from. I'll put it in the resources because I'll find it. But there was a really interesting article that specified three core issues facing that can be exacerbated basically by the introduction of AI. So one was that digitally excluded people may not be represented by AI models. Now, this is quite interesting because I think when we think of AI models, we talk about underrepresentation and fair representation, introduction of bias, hallucinations, basically. But to think of the people who are going to be most represented in the training of the models, i.e. us when we're using them or whoever uses them, are the most online people. And that's quite interesting because the models are actually becoming, they're created in the image of people who are online. They're not getting created by people or not being molded or furthered or developed by the people who are predominantly offline, the digitally excluded. So the models actually almost exacerbate that form of digital exclusion, which is something I hadn't thought about until I read this article, but now I can't remember where it came from, but I will share. And the second is AI debates are predominantly dominated by people who are perpetually online as well. And it almost gets skewered towards people who are so pro AI. I've found that, I'm sure we've all found that, that the risks are almost said as afterthought sometimes. And rather than that, why don't we take these seriously? You almost find either the session is dedicated to risk, but more than likely, it's sort of like, here are the opportunities with AI. Here's what you can use it with. And that to me is kind of, again, excluding people who might not have that access. And the final point was that the design of AI has failed to adequately account for the digitally excluded. So the design itself is of the models and the way you access it is not really keeping those people in mind or certain digitally excluded people in mind. Rachel Caldicott, who we really like, Executive Director of Careful Trouble, I believe. We've worked with her quite a few times, and every time we find that her insights are massive and really important. She says, let's make AI work for 8 billion people, not 8 billionaires. And I think that's probably the most insightful one line that summarizes the risks. I just want to mention that there is a lot of charities that are already working to tackle AI, the impact on digital exclusion. So Clear Community Web is a London-based social enterprise that supports older people, vulnerable adults and carers to feel more comfortable with that technology. So they've created a safe, supported space where people can test AI and use generative AI models to do stuff like write letters to their landlords and so on and so forth. And I thought that's such an interesting one to mention here, because that's precisely... It's a lot of what we're talking about when we talk about digital exclusion is that the things that we take for granted that we use technology to do is precisely what AI could do. And again, the digitally excluded will be left out of that. Swansea MAD or MAD, I don't know which one it is a community charity and in community charity and digital inclusion hub in the Digital Inclusion Network. And they provide AI courses for beginners as part of their work with young people and unemployed adults. The NHS is working with the Ada Lovelace Institute to have an impact its assessment for AI tool. And that should mitigate bias in AI-driven technologies. And the People's Panel on AI and AI Fringe extended public involvement in AI debate. So digital inclusion experts are advocating to get the basics right in that field, a minimum digital living standard is what they're calling it, and to recognize internet access as an essential, not a luxury. So I think there is so many people already taking that forward and already making those changes and already doing great work there. So hopefully we can tailor that debate. But so it does sometimes feel in terms of challenges that we're getting a little left behind and it's almost too much of an afterthought. So hopefully the AI debate can come get reined in a little bit and include those people who need to be included.
Yeah, totally. Thank you. Josie?
Yeah, I'll jump off from talking onto AI as well. So I think, as you said, AI has a variety of implications on digital inclusion. And yeah, those without digital confidence could be concerned about AI, and this could be a barrier to them becoming digitally engaged. Learning digital skills is a continual process as the technology evolves. So people who already have digital skills, perhaps who work in charities or are service users or are volunteers, they could become a bit more digitally excluded because they don't have the AI skills. They need to keep learning new skills to keep up with evolving technologies like AI. And AI can also be used to make the online world more hostile for some people. So, for example, by spreading misinformation and also through things like deepfakes, which can discourage people from using digital technology and then add to kind of people not feeling confident or not feeling welcome online. And this will impact the work of charities, their service users, volunteers, employees, donors, fundraisers. So it's something the charity should be aware of. I'd say in terms of other problems, I think the risk of becoming too digitalized and leaving behind those who are digitally excluded is a massive one for charities. I think, yeah, this is quite a basic thing that charities should be aware of, because it will mean charity services are less able to reach some of the people who might need their services the most, just because they can't reach them, don't know about the services, can't access them. According to the research by the Digital Poverty Alliance and Deloitte, 1 in 7 adults in the UK are digitally excluded in multiple ways. But charities are now prioritising digital when delivering services. According to the Charity Digital Skills Report, only 1/3 of charities are now prioritising face-to-face service delivery. This rises slightly to 35% among those delivering frontline services. And a further 57% primarily use digital in a supportive way. So, for example, video calling or hosting an online community. These likely have face-to-face elements, though it still means that service users could be missing out on these parts of charity services that use digital technologies. So that just demonstrates a shift towards digital, that service users might not be able to access as much. And there's a few reasons why becoming too digitalized is a concern. Many other services have digitalized, such as healthcare, banking, housing systems, social security, and education. This has left people locked out of basic systems needed for daily life. And charities are likely to want to digitalize due to the fact that funding is a primary concern for them. And using digital technologies can be a way to save time and money. But I think it's about knowing where to use them and where not to use them to avoid locking people out of a service that would otherwise be beneficial for them. Some charities, as we've discussed previously in this podcast, offer digital inclusion support alongside their core services. But I also think it's just being aware generally that it is digitally excluding to have digital as a prerequisite to accessing services. So just looking at how you deliver services and making sure there's not those barriers.
And that's where digital strategy comes in as well, isn't it? So again, in part of that video series, we talked to Claire Bloor from SARSAS, which is a charity in Somerset. And they were using lots and lots of free tools, but like not with any strategy in mind. And they weren't sure which one, but they weren't free because they were taking up time and energy and they were all being used in a sort of informal way. But actually mapping out those tools they were using and writing down the purpose and which features were really, really useful for delivering services sort of helped what you were talking about, Josie, and making sure that when digital tools were used, they were used with the service user in mind and with all service users in mind, I think. I'd also just like to highlight the challenge of, I think the digital switchover, I think it's called. They're moving from landlines and analog phones into digital voice over internet protocol, I think it's called. And that was due to happen this year, but has now been moved to 2027, I think, the deadline. But it's still coming around the corner because I remember when they first announced it would happen in 2025, and now it's 2025 and it got shifted along. But basically, I just think that it's a real concern for people in rural communities and people who rely on their landlines. And I just think that I think we all need to be aware of that's happening, because I think it's sort of, I don't know, from my perspective, faded into the background a bit. And then we wrote an article with Good Things Foundation about it last year. And yeah, it's a concern, I would say, just because there's a significant risk to people who rely on landlines losing access to the outside world. It's the long and short of it. And I think there's obviously an issue with charities having to balance budgets, funding, and all this stuff with having to reach everyone and trying to offer as many services as possible, whether it's like a helpline or a web chat as well. And we understand that, but I think that's again where a digital strategy can be really, really helpful, because it can show you where to focus efforts and help you design your services, as Josie says, with service users in mind, I think. I guess we can go to question three now. How can charities prepare for these challenges, and how are they already preparing for them? Because as we've mentioned, there are lots of charities tackling this already that, you know, we have worked with, that we've spoken to, that are doing such great work. So let's highlight some of that, I guess. And let's start with you, Josie.
Yeah. So when we asked what steps charities believe they should take to promote digital inclusion, they highlighted three key areas: training, strategy, and collaboration. So yeah, I think these are three really good areas. And starting with collaboration, collaboration can help, because some of the biggest barriers to delivering and improving digital services were a lack of skills among service users and an inability to reach service users digitally. And charities can prevent this by co-producing services with service users as a form of, this is under the heading of collaboration, but co-producing services with service users. So then you know at an earlier stage if digital skills or access is a problem, and you can build digital inclusion help into the service or avoid using digital in ways that exclude users before you get to the point where it's already excluding them. Within this, involving diverse users as much as possible to help manage the many different ways which users can be digitally excluded from your service. I think that's a really big main point, because it means it's kind of links back to having a strategy. It means that things are built from the beginning in an inclusive way, and that saves time and money later on. And most importantly, means that it's suitable for service users and is more likely to be successful because it's reaching them. So then another aspect is collaboration with other organisations. So Good Things Foundation has a national digital inclusion network made up of local organisations who help people with digital skills and confidence. So it may be right for your charity to join the network or signpost service users to your local branch. And they also have a national device bank and a national data bank, which service users can use. And also collaborating with other organisations by sharing resources. So, for example, if you have addressed a digital inclusion problem, sharing with other charities how you did it, or if you have a problem, seek advice from other charities. And charities can support digital inclusion across the UK by donating their unused devices to charities like Good Things Foundation and the Digital Poverty Alliance. And yeah, final point on strategy. More than a third of respondents don't have a digital strategy. So starting by writing a digital strategy that includes digital inclusion, and also in creating a strategy, using feedback from service users, volunteers and staff when it comes to the digital inclusion of services. And the Digital Poverty Alliance's Charter for Digital Inclusion can help with writing a strategy because it has five strategic areas for organisations to help end digital inclusion in the UK. So this is looking at it from a national perspective, using their experience with digital exclusion. And the five areas are raising awareness, ensuring accessible services, device donation and partnership for impact. And we've signed the charter, and you can sign the charter to join a group of organisations all coordinating on these actions. And yeah, it can inform your strategy as well.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much, Josie. And Jan?
Yeah, I think I'd pick up on the collaboration point because I think it's such an important one. It's the one where, honestly, charities, and particularly, I think first thing I'd say is our experience with, our first-hand experience with since launching the digital inclusion campaign has been so really kind of lovely, really. I mean, so many different charities have been welcoming and just wanting to talk to us and sharing their knowledge, pooling our resources. So a few that we've worked with is AbilityNet, Good Things Foundation, Scope, Age UK, Sport at the Heart, Digital Poverty Alliance, and so many others. And they've all provided so much insight, and it sort of shows how small-scale collaboration should work. We didn't know so much going into this campaign. We wanted to learn, and we wanted to teach our service users so that they could, you know, take that further. And so that's a really great example of a small-scale collaboration that I think worked. But there's some really tangible examples to mention, and I think it's kind of speaks to the maybe hidden example. So with sharing knowledge and pooling resources and all these things, they're the more obvious benefits of collaboration, but I think there's some like hidden benefits of collaboration or benefits we don't talk about as often. One is access to joint funding, so a lot of charities that work together can access joint funding, but the other is the way that collaboration can help you tackle systemic issues that are often outside the reach of your individual charity. So an example for in terms of digital inclusion is that you have the root economic causes of digital inclusion, which are long term and very entrenched, and then but you have the immediate problems of someone who doesn't have access to a device, who can't access, who's quite literally excluded in that present moment, and then you have the need to change the legislative landscape, essentially, which means lobbying government. Now, these are all such diverse challenges and kind of outside the remit of any given charity, and that legally probably outside the remit of any given charity because your mission couldn't be so widespread and or is unlikely to be so widespread. So collaboration allows that sort of cascading approach where you can tackle the issue of digital inclusion or whatever issue you're facing, really, by allowing different charities to work together, present a united front, and then kind of tackle these issues individually, but collectively, if that makes sense. In terms of examples of collaboration that I've seen, is one that was worth mentioning. I came across a report the other day on Manchester's Digital Inclusion Network, which includes 250 national and local cross-sector organisations, including charities, including local businesses. And I think their aim was to ensure 1.2 million digitally excluded residents have access to digital. And what I liked about it has had these localised sort of outcomes, the results that they had in sort of different parts of the greater Manchester area. But in Manchester alone, they had the outcomes, which is locally led groups helped 350 residents access a support line, 3,000 residents received data through the Greater Manchester Data Bank, 500 devices were provided to communities and charities. They saw a 22% increase in the use of an NHS app to order prescriptions and so much more. And it just speaks to a really tangible outcome-driven approach, and the joy of it is that so many people work together to achieve that. And I think it speaks to the fact that collaboration is the only, well, the only, but it's one very significant way that you can actually tackle these quite large, quite entrenched issues that have so many different levels to them. So yeah, I just thought I'd shout them out as well. And that's kind of it.
No, I love that. Thank you both. I think that's really, I think it's definitely something underutilized in the charity sector and potentially sort of weirdly from the pandemic, I think maybe it's happened. But as we become, I think it's, now's a really good time to bring that back and learn from each other. I'd also just like to add that one of the big pieces of advice that I was rewatching that digital strategy thing, but I would really recommend it because it is, there's a lot of insight there. They're like 10 minute long interviews with people who have been in the situation and in the interest of collaboration. I think there's a lot of really good lessons from there. And the big one across all of them was sort of be curious. You can make a lot of assumptions, I think, when prioritize about what your service users need, basically. And I think you can get a lot more by just asking, what do you think? So Janine Woodward-Grant from the Baines Carer Centre said that she conducted a series of in-depth interviews. She said the survey is great, but do a couple of, like, you know, do a few of those as well. That's really helpful. And she said, instead of giving the answer, like, oh, should I click here? Asking, what do you think? Where do you think that link would take you? Gives you a much bigger insight into where people, how they're navigating your site and what they actually think about it. And I just think that can be really, really helpful when prioritizing digital inclusion within your charity. So I just think it's, don't rely on assumptions. Sometimes they'll get confirmed in user research and sometimes you'll be surprised. And the other thing I would just like to add is about upskilling and training, because I think that that is also an investment in the future. It means that you'll be able to do a lot yourself if you upskill staff now, and you'll be able to adapt services in the future a lot easier, and it won't be as much of a barrier, hopefully, because, yeah, as I said, I found the training stats in our report really illuminating, and I think it's definitely, that's easily something, maybe not easily, but I think that is definitely something that the charity sector can, it's possible. As Johan said at the start, there's so many resources out there, we just need to find a way of making them more accessible. But yes, I think that you've both given some excellent points today. So are there any points that we'd like to wrap up with? Nice, concise little nuggets, anyone?
Yeah, less of a nugget. But yeah, I think my final point, and in all the research we've done and the campaign, I think it's been really edifying and enlightening, and I've really enjoyed learning about it. I think the one thing I'd say is, when I read that about the Manchester Digital Inclusion Network, the localized kind of approaches, that's where I feel like the future might lie, in taking these kind of wider issues and applying a localized approach. And so it's kind of making the abstract tangible, because we do talk about this a lot, and Charity Digital are super guilty of it in the sense that we talk and promote and preach all these things, but it's sometimes so hard to put into practice. And that's not to fault anyone or ourselves, but it's kind of, I guess my takeaway, my final point would be that I hope the charities really go out there and try and access the many things that are available, and try to turn that kind of abstract thought into something tangible. So my favorite stat from the kind of Manchester collaborative approach was that they kind of got so many devices, so much data in the hands of people. And that is the hardest part, I think, a lot of the time, is actually making those sort of efforts. But there's loads of places available for refurbished tech. There's loads of people doing interesting things. There's loads of training out there. There's data banks out there. There's free device sources out there. So yeah, if you can, and if you can find the, like, sort of motivation, but also try and have that space to improve those things, then just go out and find the many resources that will be available to your charity, so you can help your service users become digitally included. Yeah. So just making the abstract tangible, I think.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Josie?
Yeah, I had a final point about how to make sure it becomes a long-term, how to make sure digital inclusion becomes a long-term priority. And yeah, I think it's a lot about communicating the why behind what you're doing, and why it's a priority, how it actually impacts service users. because as I think that comes back to making the abstract tangible, and it helps people. If you're someone who's delivering services, you understand why this problem is important when someone's facing it, and also building it into every part of the operation. So you could be someone who's directly delivering services, coming into contact with service users, and there might be elements of digital technology involved in that. In that case, digital inclusion is relevant to you. It's also relevant to people who are uploading content to websites or building websites or writing things for social media, right? Doing your marketing. Even internally, you need to think about it. You could have people who work for you and your way of working is inaccessible to those who work for you. So you need to think about it both internally and externally. So I think, yeah, integrating it into everything and making sure everyone knows. And that means that people can spot problems and resolve them quicker and keep an eye out for it.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much. I think that's a really nice place to end. Thank you, Josie. And thank you, Joa. That's all we have time for today. Thank you to you both for sharing your insights. We hope everyone has enjoyed listening to us as well. You can find a lot more digital inclusion resources on the Digital Inclusion Hub on the Charity Digital website. We'll link to that in the description below. And you can also, as we said at the start, find the report there and find out more about digital inclusion in the UK charity sector. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.